Mark Page grew up in the small town of North Fork in McDowell County. He helped the high school win a national record in basketball, but he got his start playing basketball on makeshift courts in all seasons, even in the middle of winter.
And I wanted to be the first one up there to shoot the ball and knock the snow off the nets. So, I just couldn't wait to get up to that basketball court. And I can still today remember that feeling that, hey, I made that shot.
That's coming up in just a few minutes. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:44. I'm Teresa Wills. The Department of Education released a 33-page report titled West Virginia's Voice last week. It presents education reform ideas collected from a series of forums held around the state. The department concludes that West Virginia's education system is not broken, but identifies four priorities for improving public education: increasing pay for all school employees, increasing funding for mental health professionals, incentivizing high-performing schools by providing local flexibility to explore educational innovations, and funding supplemental pay for shortage areas, especially math instruction. The report also indicated most participants were opposed to both charter schools and educational savings accounts. Glennis Board spoke with special education teacher and president of the Ohio County Education Association, Jenny Craig. Craig is also a founder of the West Virginia United Caucus, a group of rank-and-file educators who are members of all three education unions represented in the state. Here's an excerpt of their conversation responding to the Department of Ed's report.
You hear this a lot, that West Virginia's schools are broken and that they need to be fixed. And one of the findings of the report, that that's certainly not the perception among the public, perhaps, and may not be the reality. Why do you think it is that this is an idea that is being passed around so freely?
Yes, we do have shortcomings, and that is mostly due to the mental health crisis that it's facing our students. One in four, over a fourth, actually, of our students experience an adverse psychological trauma. Our schools just aren't equipped to meet their needs. But if you look at what we are providing our students, we are not failing our students. The system is. Yes, we can do a lot better job at providing mental health services, smaller class sizes for our students, but this myth that our schools are failing has been continually perpetuated. We need to really understand and recognize that test scores are grossly manipulated by groups like ALEC and by groups on the right to make our schools look like they're failing. But if you look at West Virginia's NAEP testing scores, 75% to 86% of West Virginia students who took the NAEP test were eligible for the national school lunch category, so free and reduced lunch. And of those, when you compare that to other states, students in the same category as West Virginia, here are West Virginia's actual rankings. We rank in fourth grade math, fifth highest in the nation, in fourth grade reading, second highest in the nation, in eighth grade math, 27th in the nation, and in eighth grade reading, 15th in the nation. And so if you look at the types of students, the abject poverty that we have, the opioid crisis that's crippling our state, and the lack of mental health care, and then you use that data and you compare it similarly to other states, we are actually performing quite well. This myth that's perpetuated that West Virginia is always last just simply isn't true. It's a gross manipulation of the data.
We saw a response from Senator Carmichael to the Department of Education's report, and he didn't seem very affected by it. It wasn't a scientific sample. Basically, that the data wasn't really representing the majority, so it shouldn't be relied upon, is the inference. And I'm wondering, you know, what's your response to that line of thought and the idea that he'll essentially, his plan is to continue to present ideas about charter school and other forms of privatization?
It's really no surprise that leaders such as Carmichael, such as Patricia Rucker, who is the Senate Education Chair, are continuing to push their agenda. There's been a nationwide push to increase privatization, despite many states, not just West Virginia, many states and major cities, LA, Oakland, really pushing back and fighting back against measures of privatization because of what charter schools, vouchers, education savings accounts have done in their states. And so it's really no surprise, because this is a pattern, unfortunately, we have seen ripple across the United States. And it's because of the dark money that is really poured into that. And we can never fight that with money. We don't have the dark money that ALEC has, or that a lot of these groups that are funding this have, but we do have people power, and we can show up again in Charleston, and we can rally our teachers and our school service personnel and our parents, and eventually, hopefully, they'll start listening to the people of West Virginia, and I guess time will tell as we head into the special session.
So I want to push back a little bit, because, you know, we talk about charter schools, and I think that it's often presented in this very black and white for or against language. But the reality is there are many different types of charter schools. There are nonprofit, there are for-profit chains. Is it possible that some form of experimentation in this way could help in some ways, you know, the system that exists?
No, absolutely, I don't think so. I don't think that we can afford to experiment on West Virginia's children. I feel that our schools are already severely underfunded to meet our students' mental, emotional, and health needs. And we need to put that time and that effort into enhancing our public schools. We, in a Credo study released in 2019, they revealed that the overall performance of charter schools in rural areas, 41 days of math instruction were lost, 94 days of reading learning were lost. If you look at charter schools and special education students with that same study, so again, this is a 2019 Stanford University Credo study, the average of 65 math instructional days were lost and 89 reading instructional days were lost. And so that data is out there, and we've done our homework, and we know that with the severe needs that we do have in our schools and the growing needs that we have in our schools, we can't afford to take some of those successes that we, you know, you can pick out in charter schools across the country and experiment with West Virginia's children.
That was Jenny Craig, special education teacher and president of the Ohio County Education Association. She was speaking with Glennis Board in Wheeling. The latest episode of Inside Appalachia looks at how consolidation of schools affects community pride and participation in extracurricular activities like sports. This morning, we'll hear the first in a three-part story about the town of North Fork, West Virginia. The town was quite famous during the 1970s and 80s, winning 8 state basketball championships in a row during one particularly successful stretch. West Virginia Public Broadcasting video producer John Hale has family roots in this community. Roxy Todd sat down with him to hear about the story he uncovered about North Fork High.
So this story, which we'll hear in just a minute, is a really personal one for you and your family. You returned back to your family's home of North Fork, and most of you have since moved away. But this is where you all call home, essentially. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I moved from North Fork when I was relatively young, but we still had family and everyone who lived down in North Fork. My mother taught at Switchback Elementary, which was a elementary school down there. And when I was little, my godmother was actually still in Algoma. So, and my grandparents live in Algoma. So even though we didn't live there, you know, it was almost like it was my second home.
So North Fork actually didn't become a high school until 1966. As far as I understand, essentially it was consolidated right after integration became law and the black school merged with the white school. And now your uncles went to school a few years after that. What did they remember from this time in terms of how racial integration kind of played out in their community?
My two uncles, David McDaniel and Mark Page, we called him Uncle Joe, they said they really didn't notice much of a change when integration happened due to the, you know, community itself being pretty much well-knit and, you know, tied together.
And would you describe your two uncles for us?
Yes. My Uncle David, tall, I say about 6'5", kind of a lanky build. He is life of a party. he could probably go in a room and not only draw attention to himself, but also, you know, make sure everyone is having a good time. My other uncle, Uncle Joe, he was a little bit more reserved, but he had a sense of humor that was real, real low key. That was one of the best things that that I remember about him.
And one of the other people you talked to for this story is Carol Sizemore. Tell us a little bit about her.
Carol's a longtime resident, and she's the current mayor of Norfolk. She has been there since the very beginning. She remembers all of the sights and sounds of Norfolk, and she remembers how great the community was back in the day.
We had a drugstore. We had a Masonic building. We had a wonderful high school, a few nice restaurants. So it was just a meeting place, a social meeting place for everybody to come, because when I was young in that time, this was like a metropolitan area.
And your uncles told you a similar story about when McDowell County was doing really well, coal was booming, and there were a lot of businesses and a lot of people back in the 60s and 70s. Let's pick back up. I think there's a story your Uncle David told you about when coal was doing really well.
Yeah, my Uncle David remembers that back when McDowell County in the 60s and 70s, when the coal fields were booming, it seemed like they had everything that they could ever want. It was filled with stores and restaurants, and there was a really, really big car dealership down there called Carroll Motors. That was everyone's local car dealership. And the mines were doing so well in the 60s that he worked as a coal miner over the summer, and he made some really good money. And I mean really good.
The money was so good, I bought me a 68 Plymouth Roadrunner with 2 paydays. So when I went back to school, after that summer, I was the man. I was the man. But life was good around here, man. It was really good.
Coal was king in McDowell County in the 60s and 70s. At one point, this county is one of the richest in the country due to coal production. There were more than 53 communities that either had their own mines or housed miners who worked in the area. The coal mines attracted workers from all over the country, even the world. So there was a pretty diverse group of people in McDowell, from what my Uncle Joe remembers.
Everybody knew everybody. It wasn't that, you know, there wasn't any hate in the air. You know, it wasn't any racial tensions and all that stuff. No, we didn't have, at least as far as I'm concerned, the Italians, the whites, the blacks, we all got along great.
But athletes were probably treated better than non-athletes, given their status in the community. David admits that he only realized later that Norfolk may have been more segregated than he realized.
With me getting attention on who I was, I didn't know racial things happened until I got older and I heard some of other people's stories. Even the principal, they say he used to carry a gun. I didn't know this. I was a basketball star at the time, and I got along with white folks and black folks. I really didn't see it because even the principal, even the police officer, the store owners, the dry cleaner man, the smokehouse man, everybody treated me well. And I just thought that's the way it was. But after I grew up and started hearing other people's stories on what used to go around here, but I do remember the movie theater, the Freeman Theater, we always sat in the back. White folks sat up front.
David may have been isolated from some of the tensions that were present, but there were a lot of African Americans in Norfolk in the 1960s. He and Joe both grew up in a little community called Algoma, just outside of town.
40 or 50 families, and at least, and you're talking maybe 3 or 4 white on the ends, and everybody else is black. Black families. Yeah, there's a lot of families there, and all black, in that one community.
Algoma was a small community. If you blinked, you might not notice you drove through it. When they were kids, Joe and David played without any blacktop or asphalt, just dirt. They lovingly referred to those games as Dust Bowl games. I went out to Algoma to check out the site where they once played basketball on their makeshift court.
Certain neighborhoods around here had playgrounds. In my neighborhood, we didn't. We created our own playground. Even when we played basketball, we used to have to go up in the mountain, cut our tree. We'd go get a metal tabletop and tack it on to that tree, and that'd be our backboard. We made our own stuff around here, man, all the way.
We played in the summertime. We played in the fall. We played in the winter. I can remember waiting for the snow to stop one time, and I wanted to be the first one up there to shoot the ball and knock the snow off the nets. So, I just couldn't wait to get up to that basketball court. And I can still today remember that feeling that, hey, I made that shot.
There were no streetlights, so not only did they have to get creative with the materials they use, they also had to be resourceful when it came to lighting the court.
And we had a curve. When the car come around the curve, it'll shine it on the goal, and then we'll shoot when the light hit the goal.
All those hours playing basketball paid off for David and Joe. They both made the high school team, and although they played during different years, each would be responsible for making history in Norfolk.
That was John Hale in a story he produced for Inside Appalachia called One Family's Legacy in the Basketball Capital of the United States. Tomorrow, we'll hear how the North Fork Blue Demons made history and what it meant for the community. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.